Good afternoon. It's my privilege today to introduce Rob McGuirk, who we all know as our member at Rotary Club of Melbourne, also our past president and director of Rotary Club of Melbourne. Rob has had a long involvement with youth hostels and last year elected as international president of Hostelling International. I'd also like to add here that Rob was one of the first people I met before I did my peace fellowship in Sweden, and I remember his spirit of generosity giving me some of his contacts in Argentina, which really made a difference to my trip during my peace fellowship. So that spirit of generosity is really appreciated. Rob also is the chair of the Indigenous Programs Committee and launched the End Trachoma Project, which we've all heard of. The Australia-wide project now for Rotary in Indigenous health, and has done a phenomenal job at getting this up and running. Rob is a lawyer by trade and has also had his own software business. Today, Rob will be talking about the social purpose of youth hostels and how the organisation has influenced society since it started over 100 years ago. Please welcome Rob.
Thanks very much for that introduction, Stephanie, and just a couple of corrections. I haven't been a president of the Rotary Club of Melbourne, a vice president though, and I'm not chairman of the Indigenous Programs Committee at present, but I was also chairman, but just a couple of corrections. But thanks for that generous introduction. I'd like to start today with two acknowledgements. The first is to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which we meet, which is the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, and to pay my respects to their elders past and present. And the second acknowledgement is to acknowledge one of our own elders, and that's my dear friend and long-standing member of this club, John Mitchell, who passed away in December 2016. I acknowledge John as when I first joined the board of YHA Victoria in 1989, he was its CEO. And he was very supportive of me in my various roles at YHA, both in Victoria and then nationally and then internationally as well. John was also instrumental in getting me to join the Rotary Club of Melbourne. So thank you for the opportunity to be able to talk to you today about the social purpose of youth hostels. I selected this topic as YHA in Australia and Hostelling International are both social purpose organisations, as is our club, of course, and Rotary International. But let me just first ask a question. Who has stayed in a YHA hostel here and overseas? Can you please raise your hands? I knew Judy was going to. Okay, so that's a reasonable amount of you. Well, you might be surprised to learn that you've contributed to the almost 1.9 billion overnights that have been generated by youth hostels globally since they first started. So you just imagine how many lives have changed or been influenced by the number of interactions that have taken place in these hostels around these overnights. I often summarise the purpose of hostels as being the three C's. They create connections, cooperation, and cultural understanding. They also used to have a fourth C, as I was talking to Judy about before this meeting, which was called chores. That's when if you stayed at the hostel, you were expected to sweep up, clean the toilets, or do something like that. And that's what happened when I first joined. But I can assure you, they're no longer required. Because you know how hard it is to get any kid this day to do any chores. Well, imagine when they're on holidays what your chances are. So hostels, though, they're designed with a minimum emphasis on the sleeping areas and the maximum emphasis on the common areas for interactions, which include the lounges, the social areas, and kitchens. And the kitchen's where you can bring along your own food and prepare your food. So in this environment, curiosity can arise and the opportunity for a deeper understanding of humans and their daily lives and cultures. I remember when I was staying in a hostel in New Zealand many years ago, I walked into the lounge there and there was a woman who I found out later was probably in her mid to late 70s. And she had four or five young people sitting in front of her, fascinated about what she had to say. They were probably in their 18 to 20, mid-20s or something. And it turns out she was from America. She was a microbiologist who'd studied water globally. And these kids were fascinated by her stories. So for those of you who have stayed in hostels, ask the questions, did they create a connection for you? Did you end up travelling with others? Did they help you learn about how people live in other countries and their cultures? If yes, then we've succeeded in our purpose. Personally, I joined YHA in Australia in 1979, and that was to travel overseas after I completed university. As I only had a one-way ticket and not much money, I stayed in youth hostels to maximise my time away and the number of places I could afford to visit. And this is still true today for today's travellers. The first hostel I stayed in was in Carter Lane in London, near St Paul's Cathedral. And I'd planned to get a job when I was over there, hopefully with a law firm. Well, as it turned out, I got the job with the law firm before I found somewhere to live. So I was still staying in the youth hostel. So in the mornings, in a dormitory of 12 people, I was getting up, I was opening my suitcase, I was putting on my suit and tie, pulling my little briefcase out of there and heading off to work. Meanwhile, all the other people in the other beds were putting on their jeans, their flannel shirts and backpacks and heading out to experience the world. So I did find somewhere to stay eventually, though. In those days, though, the only well-known international accommodation providers were Hosteling International and the YM and the YWCAs. So for parents who had children travelling overseas, it was almost a standard requirement for their children to have a YHA membership because that made them feel more relaxed. And back then, Hosteling International had a large share of a small market. But that changed. With the growth of budget air travel, and the market for budget accommodation grew also. And there's now significant competition due to the growth of the backpacker accommodation market and also other forms of accommodation such as Airbnb. So today we have a much smaller share of a much larger market. But let me just take you back to some of the history of when hosteling first began to explain how European society at the beginning of the 20th century created the youth hostel movement and its purpose. In the early 1900s, a German school teacher, Richard Sherman, was posted to a school in the coal mining area of the Ruhr in Germany. This was a time of rapid industrialisation in Germany, and he was appalled by the misery of the pale-faced children who had never seen open green fields. So he took his students on walking excursions in the countryside, and he's described this as a roaming school. In Germany at that time, there was also a popular social movement for outdoor activities. It was called Wandervogel, or wandering birds, which promoted freedom, self-responsibility, and the spirit of adventure, and the youth hostel concept tapped into that social trend. Sherman moved to a town called Altena, which was in the North Rhine region, where on the 26th of August 1909, he was out walking with one of his group of students when they were caught in a storm. They sought shelter in a school building where the headmaster gave them a classroom and some of the local farmers gave them straw on which to sleep. That night, he conceived the idea that schools could be used to provide accommodation and students could walk between them and stay overnight in these youth hostels. And this marked the official beginning of the youth hostel movement. The first hostel was actually Sherman's own school. And this is where he used straw sacks, which were removed during the day, and he had two classrooms, one for girls and one for boys. In 1912, with the assistance of a provincial councillor, he was able to transfer his youth hostel from the school to a 12th century hilltop castle in Altena, which he equipped with dormitory bunks and cooking and washing facilities. So this was the first real youth hostel. This hostel still operates today in the castle, and also there's a museum there which shows parts of the old facilities and other memorabilia, which I've seen myself, and I can say it's very interesting if you're in that area. By 1913, there were 83 hostels recording about 21,000 overnights a year. But this was interrupted by the First World War. And Sherman actually served in the German army during the war. But he survived and recommenced his work with hostels after the war finished. On the 2nd of November 1919, the German Youth Hostel Organisation was established with Sherman as its first chairman. Over the next decade, in November this year, the German Youth Hostel Association celebrates its 100th year anniversary. Over the next decade, he built support for the movement from other schools, teachers, and a German education system, which eventually prescribed school rambling days. So they thought it was significantly important for kids to be educated by going in onto these walks and staying in the countryside, so they prescribed school rambling days. He was also assisted by substantial donations from philanthropists, trade unions, and many provincial governments. So you can see that the original purpose of hosteling was to allow the youth who had experienced the environmental costs of industrialisation and the ravages of the Great War to return to nature and open-air life and to promote comradeship and independence. By 1919, the more general youth hostel youth movement in Germany, the youth movement, not the youth hostel movement, had some 5 million members. And the youth hostel movement was becoming a significant part of that social trend. During the unparalleled global economic depression, the movement continued to grow such that by 1931, there were 2,600 hostels in 12 European countries. The German organisation still dominated the movement, as it had around 2,000 of those hostels. In October of 1932, an international conference of youth hostel associations was convened in Amsterdam, with Richard Sherman elected as its chairman. This meeting led eventually to the formation of the International Youth Hostel Federation, which is now known as Hosteling International, and Richard Sherman was its first president. The objects of the international organisation were developed and are today enshrined in its constitution. They are to promote the education of all young people of all nations, but especially young people of limited means, by encouraging them a greater knowledge, love and care of the countryside, and an appreciation of the cultural values of towns and cities in all parts of the world. And as an ancillary thereto, to provide youth hostels or other accommodation in which there shall be no distinction of race, nationality, colour, religion, sex, class, or political opinions, and thereby to develop a better understanding of their fellow men, both at home and abroad. So that became the stated purpose of Hosteling International, and it continues to this day. We educate through travel and by breaking down barriers between different cultures, which I think you'll agree is still of vital importance in today's world. We currently use the byline, learn to travel and travel to learn, in our marketing. Meanwhile, back in Germany in 1933, the National Socialist Party, or Nazis, came to power. They replaced the various youth groups in Germany with a single organisation known as the Hitler Youth. Sherman was removed as the chairman of the German Association, so he increasingly turned his focus to international relations as he was disenchanted with the political system in Germany. To the extent that in 1935 he travelled to the USA and he covered nearly 10,000 miles speaking, as luck would have it, to Rotary clubs, universities, women's clubs and schools. And he also met with Eleanor Roosevelt, who was the wife of the American president. In 1937, after pressure from the German government, he resigned as international president. But the organisation continued to grow with a new English president, such that before the outbreak of war in 1939, there were 4,600 hostels, recording over 11 million overnights a year. So it's somewhat ironic that the youth hosteling in Australia officially commenced with its first public meeting here in Melbourne, Victoria, on the 4th of September 1939. That was the day after Australia had followed Great Britain into the war with Germany. Much of the early support for its development in Australia came from the National Fitness Council, which, pardon the pun, was a logical fit with the values of hosteling. But the youth hostel organisations then grew into the other states and territory, and Northern Territory. In 1947, a national meeting took place that led to the forming of the national body in Australia. And in 1948, that body, AYHA, became a member of the international organisation. Because one of the requirements of international membership was that there could be only one member from each country. So we needed the federated structure to become the member of the international organisation. It was realised in the 1990s that the various state-based structures were an overhead and an unnecessary layer of governance, so discussions started about possible mergers. Eventually, by way of a series of mergers commenced in 2010, one national Australian organisation, YHA Australia, was finally achieved in September 2017. YHA has, since its beginnings in Australia, been a part of the social fabric in several cities and towns around the country, and it's served to introduce many foreign travellers to the Australian way of life. Back in the older days, through the 40s, the 50s and the 60s, the hostels were actually partially built, renovated and staffed by volunteers. And they formed clubs around the hostels with activities such as bushwalking, sailing and skiing. But today, YHA in Australia has 75 hostels, 32 of which are owned. We have nearly 8,300 beds, and we have an average of 4,400 guests per night. So you can see we are hosting a small town every night here in Australia. We generate 1.6 million overnights per year, with guests from over 137 different countries. We have 250,000 members, with a turnover of about 44 million with assets of 240 million. Hostel International today is one of the largest providers of accommodation globally, with more than 4,000 hostels. It has been ranked as the sixth biggest global accommodation chain in the world. It has one of the world's largest membership organisations with over 3.7 million members. Rotary International has 1.2, so it's three times the number of members. And it generates about 35 million overnights each year, operating in over 80 countries. The social credentials of Hostelling International have been enhanced by its accredited status with both UNESCO and the UN World Tourism Organisation, and it's also a member of the Global Sustainable Tourism Council. It's also adopted internationally various resolutions of social standards for its member organisations to follow, and these have included, in the 1980s, standards for non-polluting materials, in the 90s, an international environmental charter. In the 2000s, there's a marketing campaign and initiatives to promote youth hostelling as a means of peace and international understanding. In the 2010s, there was an international sustainability charter adopted, and we've continued to work to align hostelling practices with the global sustainable development goals. Last year at the international conference, resolutions were adopted for member associations to minimise the use of single-use plastics and to continuously reduce their food use footprint. And I was also elected as president, so it's a very important conference, the last one. I'll give one recent example about hostels fulfil their social purpose. And this is a story that was told at this club last year. This was at our meeting on the 1st of August 2018. Katie Wilford, who is a global grant scholar who was being hosted by Kevin Sheehan, stood up and said a few words. And she spoke about her experiences, and that resonated with me. So I asked her to write the story down, and I sent it to our marketing people up in Sydney. And I'll quote a bit from her story, but she said, "I'm intrigued by the power of hostels. I've stayed in at least four dozen hostels throughout my travels, and I truly believe that someone can experience so much more in a hostel than in a hotel." Katie's story is that she was a teacher, and in May 2017, based in the US, she became disenchanted with her teaching role and spoke to a friend about what she thought she should do. Well, a friend recommended that she apply for a Rotary Global Scholar program. And another friend's father said, "Well, maybe you should think about travelling. Don't give up teaching, but think about travelling and experience more of life or live somewhere different." So Katie decided she would. So she headed to Europe. She stayed in hostels. And eventually she was in a hostel in Oslo, where she was greeted by a cheery Australian woman. While she was chatting, two other Australians came up, and she describes the women as recognising each other's dialect and went into a wild babble on figuring out where they were from and where they went to university. Well, as it turned out, all three of the women went to Melbourne University, and they spoke highly about its cool clubs, enchanting vibrant spirit on campus, and the amazing academic support they got. So Katie said, "That's it, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going home, I'm going to apply for the Global Scholarship, and I'm going to head off." And she did. She got the scholarship and then came to Melbourne. And she said it was a huge leap of faith, but she's loved every minute of it so far. So that was her story from last year. So that's just one example of how hostels can change someone's life. I know hostels have changed my life, which is why I'm honoured to have been elected as the first Australian president of Hostelling International. My goal is to see that HI continues to fulfil its role in promoting cultural exchanges and understanding, in promoting respect for the environment, and encouraging cooperation between countries and cultures, united by the belief that travel is a great teacher and a great leveller, and it should be a part of everyone's education where this is possible. We aim to continue to facilitate this for as many young people as is possible, particularly those of limited means. I hope that this has given you some idea of the impact of youth hostelling it's had on a society over the last 100 years, and I'd be happy to take any questions that you might have.